Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello there.
I'm Schmidt from the Kosher Scene. Our guest this evening is a legend in the kosher culinary world. She's a successful cookbook author, international lecturer. This is Levana Kirschenbaum. Good evening, Levana.
Hello there. Thank you for having me.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
Since most of my audience are Ashkenazim Buzbuzim, and we find the Sephardic cuisine extremely exotic, extremely delicious. In fact, personally, there is a lot of stuff I like much better than the Ashkenazi cuisine.
Can we all get along and be friends, please?
As a matter of fact, I said that I like a lot of stuff better than the Ashkenazi cuisine.
I know. We don't want to alienate anyone.
We're not. I'm just trying to get everybody to discover stuff.
Yes.
So here's my question to you. You come originally from Morocco.
Yes.
So were there any specific customs, any specific foods associated with the 3 weeks period that we are in currently since yesterday?
Okay. The answer is a little long-winded. Here it is. We had very, very, very little cooked dairy other than breakfast, like our little pancakes slathered in, they're called barrer, they are like those little blinis with a million little holes. We loved that, and we slathered them in butter. In other words, we did not have a dish like a lasagna or a pasta with grated cheese. It was just those breakfast things with butter and honey. So for us, the idea is always to have, I would say, 80-20, you know, that famous golden rule of real estate, 80-20, becomes
right.
Our golden rule of food. 80 is vegetarian. 20 is meat, poultry. In other words, nobody sits with a 20-ounce ribeye steak. But you will sit with lots and lots of salads and vegetable dishes and two little meatballs. That would make about 3 ounces of meat, or one drumstick. A chicken would serve 8 people. This is like every day. This is our food. This was our food. If we made soup, we made soup make soup almost every night with a little flanken in it or a little beef shoulder in it, and that is the meat. You got a little chunk in your bowl with a lot of salad, a lot of good bread, a lot of mint tea, and that's your meal. Now, with this premise, when that meat disappears, 80% stays on. In other words, not a significant loss. We did not have to systematically think, oh my gosh, what am I going to make? Well, you're going to make all your salads, all your vegetable dishes, and instead of making those meatballs with celery or onion or peas or all those wonderful things, olives, tomatoes, you will make fish with those things. And so the transition will be almost painless. We did not replace our regular dinners with lasagna or with, I don't know, pizza or something. That was almost foreign to us. In fact, our pizza consisted of a meat pizza or a part of pizza or a fish pizza.
Okay, I understand that the first part of the 3 weeks, there would have been meat. What did you do then during the 9 days?
Oh, that's exactly what I told you. The 3 weeks were what we always eat. The answer
mean, so
that I just gave you
nine
applied,
days, even during the 9 days,
to the 9 days,
you would have a pizza that was a meat pizza and stuff like that?
Yeah, we had a dairy with anchovies, olives, what we had all year round. In other words, what I was saying is the transition was almost painless. We almost didn't notice. We didn't pack in those dairy-cooked dishes that we pack in here. We didn't have, because we Orthodox Jews, Sephardi Jews, had one sink, one set of dishes. So it was either parev or meat, parev meat, parev slash meat. And when we had dairy, we had six little glass dishes where we put our, you know, pancakes and our crepes and our with butter and honey. And that's it. That's all I remember from our dairy. Buttermilk, not cooked. It was an accessory, much more than a vital ingredient to a dish.
Interesting. Now that we are in the 3 weeks, now that you have been exposed to food other than Moroccan food, both in France, where you studied, and here in the States and in your travels around the world, and let's face it, even though it's the 3 weeks, a very somber period, the saddest period in Jewish history, we still have to eat. What would you recommend as a nice menu during the first part of the 3 weeks and then during the 9 days?
Okay, the first part of the 3 weeks, absolutely nothing changes. You do what you always do, those 2 weeks. So let's just focus on those. During those, the first two of the 3 weeks, there's absolutely no restriction. So you can eat anything you want, make anything you like. During the 9 days, I would do absolutely all my vegetarian dishes the way I always do, which is the great majority of what I always serve, even on Shabbos, even on the Shabbos, even on time where there is no restriction. So there's a whopping 80%. This is why I think everybody in my house is in such good shape, in ideal shape, because it's not the bulk of what we eat is these great big soups, these great big salads, these great big dishes of grains, and then the rest. If it was going to be a roast chicken, it will be a cooked tilapia with fresh tomatoes and fennel, let's say. A lentil soup. I'm sorry, but I make soup all year round, hot soup, cold soup. It doesn't matter. I'll put on the air conditioner. I'll have a big bowl of hot soup. It's wonderful. I'm not a slave of the seasons for these things. I think that soup is always filling, hearty, satisfying, and I will just make it. There are many, many hot, very light soup that you can make, like a minestrone or a very light fresh pea soup, a very light zucchini and fennel soup, so all those things. About salad, there is absolutely no restriction. What I'm really saying is if you approach the changes with, oh, yeah, yeah, what am I going to eat? There's nothing to eat. You're going to be boxed in. If you say, I can have all the vegetable dishes, I can have all the soups, I can have all the salads, the only thing I have to adjust is where I was going to make a roast chicken, make some baked salmon, or some pasta dish with cheese, or even no cheese. It's You know what happens during the 9 days? You begin to discover or love things that you have been neglecting. It's all
absolutely
there. You know what I'm saying, right?
Right, absolutely. Okay, so we understand that there are no traditional foods.
And then dessert, let me say this to you. Dessert, absolutely everything. There is no fleishig dessert, right?
Right.
You can make everything parve, you can make everything dairy. This is where I come from. This is the way I approach it. What is it that you can't have? All that you can't have is that piece of meat or that piece of chicken. Replace it. Replace it with a piece of fish or a dairy dish, and you're there.
Well, the limitations are the meat, chicken, and wine, basically. And since most people don't
well,
put the wine,
well, you can have a nice drink
don't
on the rocks. You can have beer. We are still okay.
Yeah.
We're still okay. My husband loves, very often he'll have his meal with something on the rocks, anytime. Not even during the 9 days. So, in other words, it's not the end of the world. You know what I heard, and this is very interesting, but of course we don't avail ourselves of it because I don't want to look like an opportunist. It says somewhere from a sure source that if you are totally used to having a glass of wine with your meal, like if it is a matter of course, you can have it during those 9 days. Now, I would say that we love our glass of wine with our meal almost every single day, but since we know that we can survive during the 9 days, we don't do it during the 9 days. Can I tell you what I love to drink during the 9 days is when I make my panache. You know what that's, the French panache is? It's the half beer and half ginger ale. It's the best. Shanty, I think it's called in the islands.
Okay.
In other words, you make more room for other things.
You mean 50% beer and 50% what was
ginger
the other
ale.
Item? Ginger ale.
Ginger ale. Delicious. We call it panache.
Okay, I'll have to try that.
Delicious.
It sounds interesting, but I'll have to try it.
I had it just now. Me and my husband, we love that. It reminds me of my college days.
Any specific beer, or it doesn't make a difference?
No. I prefer to use light beer just because I worry about, I want to stay calorically correct.
Something like the French Pêcheur? For example?
No, even Corona, Budweiser, anything. It doesn't matter. This does not call for a luxurious brand.
Okay. We'll have to try that.
Delicious. Oh,
what
you never had that? Delicious.
I've never had that.
Very refreshing.
What are some of the other recommendations that you would make that are easy to prepare, both for the 9 days or at any time of the year?
I'll tell you something. I am so convinced, and I have a confirmation all day long from all my fans, all my readers, that all my recipes are tried and true and easy to realize and execute, that I recommend absolutely everything in my cookbook that does not have meat or dairy. Meat or poultry, and that's that. Everything, a curry, a stir fry, a pasta dish. Can I just rattle off something I made for my daughter?
Please.
We surprised her for her 30th birthday, and we were a nice bunch. We were about 45, 50 people, and there were so many raves from that meal. I just must share it with you. The first thing I did, I brought my own linens in a small party space in Brooklyn, and I made an antipasto display. Oh my gosh, it was so beautiful, just the best of the best of the best. And this is a party menu. In other words, even if you scale it down, there's plenty of room to play. Mm-hmm. In that antipasto, I made roasted peppers, stuffed grape leaves, roasted beets, artichoke hearts marinated, gigantic Cerignola olives, beautiful mini Campari tomatoes, three color, roasted beets, I think I said that. It was so fabulous. And in the middle of that antipasto, I put in a basil and olive oil dip. Just basil and olive oil, but very, very intense with tons of basil. So that was one item. The other item, my son-in-law went to Israel, and I said, we were surprising my daughter. I said, you absolutely must go to Machane Yehuda and get me 3 wheels of cheese. I have bail money ready for the for the Israeli custom. Just get it. And we had that. Some bleu de bresse, manchego, and conte. And it was magnificent. I so deplore that we don't have those magnificent cheeses in America. What I would give. This morning I put a message on Facebook. I said, please, Hashem, see to it that we get some of those cheeses that they all get in Machane Yehuda in New York. This is New York, for God's sakes. Then I made my own porcini oil, which I have on my blog, and I made a fettuccine in porcini oil and wild mushrooms out of this world. I made, let's see, I made, and here was the thing that prompted me to tell you my menu, a mung, aduki, and lentil dish with curry and Swiss chard. Very simple and very satisfying, delicious. I made 3 kinds of fish. I made a smoked white fish salad with apple and potatoes, a sliced Scotch salmon with giant caper berries and lemon and watercress wasabi sauce. And I made, and this was the great, great attraction, those little teaspoons with the turned up end that just stand on their own with tuna tartare. You'll find it on my blog. Unbelievable delicious. And then I made my own raspberry vinegar and made baby arugula with fennel, fresh corn, avocado. And why do I rattle off this menu to you? Because even at the time where I was not restricted, here I am making 90% all Paris with those cheeses as an attraction. And it was unbelievable. I had drinks, no soda in sight whatsoever. I made ice, coffee, iced tea, beer, liquor, good wines and everything. And listen to this. And then for dessert, I made my frozen peanut butter chocolate ice cream cake. Simple enough and fabulous, absolutely fabulous. It served 50 people. It did just disappeared in the wink of an eye. I made my sea salt caramel chocolate truffles, chocolate chip cookies, you know, with me, an absolute must mm-hmm. because the whole world makes them. And then my son-in-law, again, brought a wheel. Let me say this to you. He brought a wheel of espresso bean, crushed espresso bean halva. Chaim, I have never tasted anything so magnificent. Never. First of all, it was not even too sweet and cloying. And then the wheel, it sliced very nicely, and it was very moist. In other words, the cohesiveness of the texture did not come from too much sugar. I don't know where the heck it came from. I was asking on Facebook, any of you in Israel, please, hello, give me the recipe to that halva because it was fabulous. And by the way, any of your listeners live in Israel, in the Shuk, Mamlechet HaChalva, Halva Kingdom. Mm-hmm. They have like 30 or 40 flavors. I never.
Wow.
We were fainting from it. There was like, it was a stampede.
That whole menu, as you described it, sounds not only like a feast for the palate, but a feast for all the senses, for the eyes.
Yeah,
you know,
if you go on my...
Incredible.
It was so magnificent. And, oh, and let me just to give you a whole picture. And this was on a day where I was not in the least restricted. It's just because this is what I prefer. Also, I bought like 7 or 8 kinds of bread from Fairway. Fabulous breads. What's it called? Focaccia, olive bread, rosemary, sea salt bread, baguettes. I tell you, the people, they were chalishing. They were really, really chalishing. It was wonderful. So that dessert was great, that menu was great, and it was also approachable, totally approachable. There was nothing that, oh, listen to this, I also made a salsa, a fresh tomato salsa with chipotle and preserved lemon. I have all that menu on my blog. Okay, just go on my blog and you'll find everything, and you'll find the recipe to that outrageous ice cream cake. And I got so many raves for that menu. It was so sweet. It was so to the point. My guidelines were youthful, playful, and I hate to say the word, but this is the word, sexy food, like food that you, it's not Shabbos dick, it's not, it's like a complete departure from what we always make, and it was gorgeous. And as a great big centerpiece, I had all the bistro checkered red and white linens, you know what I'm saying? You know them. Right. And in the center, I had the gigantic, an absolutely gigantic chamomile plant. That's all. That was my whole flower. But gigantic.
Wow.
Like over 2 feet in diameter. It was
wow.
A great success. All I know is 3 different people told me, Lavana, you know how to throw a party.
Let's talk a bit about your cookbooks.
Yes.
How does your last one, the Whole Foods Kosher book, differ from the others? What was your philosophy when you were writing that book as opposed to some of the others?
I'll tell you what. My philosophy from the time I started the restaurant, and even when the restaurant was just a bakery, to this day, it always had to be real ingredients. I have never, never, never compromised with this. The difference is with this one, I just step it up to the hilt, even at the risk of being a complete pest. I don't say anything about organic. I don't say anything about just the real, real food, unprocessed. And that was, and I found the treasure trove. And, I mean, you know how gigantic my book is. As gigantic as it is, it's only because I, in the 11th hour, I used a little restraint. I could have made a book 3 times that size and never run out of material. And the thing is that in those books, I play up to the hilt all my favorite cuisines. There's lots of them. There's almost all of them, but all made with real, even American, which always suffers from a great stigma. I play up the chocolate and the peanut butter and the turkey and the, you know what I'm saying? And because if you use it well, it's gonna be fabulous. And then it has all my great culinary love, including my original, most enduring love, Sephardi cuisine and Moroccan cuisine.
Right.
And after that comes all Asian flavors. I'm total suckers for Asian flavors. What else? French, of course, because I'm so intimate with it. Indian, because it's on the stovetop, and this is the way we love to cook, Mevushal, right? And so, I mean, you find, in other words, you find lots and lots of things that may be new to a lot of people, but they are so approachable, easier. They don't mobilize an oven. They don't make the kitchen very hot, because it's just, remember you have a stovetop? Turn it on and bring a broad-bottom, wide pot, and you're going to have a meal for 12 people right there. In fact, listen to this. I don't know if I told you this. This summer, just as last summer, I am working 1 day a week in a children's camp in Crown Heights, in the Eshel building, you know, next door to Basil Restaurant. And just to tell you how much mileage... Just to tell you how much mileage I got with my food last year. Last year, it was half the time cooking and half the time craft. This year, they said, no. No craft. Thank you very much. You just cook till you drop. So I have my little 6-year-old granddaughter who is joining this year, and she was killing herself to say the word participating. She said, she started crying. I heard I'm too small to participate. I said, no, you're going to be eating because the 6 years old are not hands-on. But it was just such a riot, especially because the head count in the camp this year is more than double. It was such a great success that it's an arts camp. Singing, dancing, creative writing, crafts, it's so fabulous. So we're cooking. We're cooking the whole day. We're cooking crepes, smoothies. What else are we making?
The camp started already.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Started last week. You're not 6 years old, so you're not following this very closely. You understand?
So, how does one get a hold of your books?
Very
how
easy.
Does one
it's on,
book your demo sessions?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the second part.
How does one book your demo sessions?
My demonstrations?
And I've attended
they are
many
in...
of them. Every single one of them is worth it.
Oh, it was wonderful. You know that for 30 years I gave weekly classes. Then I retired myself after 30 years, made everybody very happy because, I mean, it went on and on and on. But that gives me more time to get invited in New York and around the country, and is just go on my blog, lavannacooks.com, and you have a link, book Lavanna, and it's all there. Not only does it have the format and the prices, and it has absolutely everything. It's like I walk you through a potential demo all the way. I tell you everything I need, it's all there. And then the books, they're on sale on Amazon, they're on sale in Barnes & Noble, they're on sale on my blog, lavannacooks.com. And I have all my books in digital form, too. And that's very, very useful for our friends who live abroad, Israel and
right.
France and Canada. This is fabulous.
One thing that I like about your latest book, The Whole Food Kosher Kitchen, is that you have changed the format, the layout, to a more contemporary look that is much not only much easier on the eye, but it's much more logical for finding things, for understanding things.
Yes, and I
you
think...
You have come a long way since your first book, which itself was a very, very beautiful book. But you have come a long, long way in the way you envision your books, I guess, with all the experience, with everything, your outlook has changed, has evolved.
Okay. The first book was a book that was a luxurious book. It was it was published by Stuart Tabori Chang, who loved to call themselves the Rolls-Royce of the publishers. Well-deserved, too. It was very gratifying that the very first time I took a shot at writing a book, I got the very best publishers. So I sort of think of myself, I hope it's not too presumptuous, as the pioneer of the good, elegant kosher cookbook, not the sisterhood kosher cookbook. Of course,
as a matter of fact, I totally agree. You started the trend. Just like
it was followed by
with your restaurant.
Right. The restaurant was just we were in a no man's land. It was like a complete waste. There was absolutely nothing in terms of kosher cooking. And you know what? After we closed our restaurant like a few years ago, I still get all those emails and all those messages. You had venison, you had buffalo. Where is it? Where is it? Is that we took the trouble and these new restaurant owners are not taking the trouble. That's one. Two, they are making meals that are much more expensive and that are much less lavish. This was, you know, we were the pioneers, so we took all the abuse. All the abuse. Well, I used to hear regularly, when I win the lottery, I'll come to you. That was like for a $40, $50 meal. Now they pay $150, $200, and they
right.
keep their mouths shut because the owners of those luxurious restaurants are not going to take the abuse that we took. They have rules. We didn't have any rules. We just said, please come, whatever it takes, just come. Even as we had limos waiting at the doors, we just said, just come, just come. We were, I think we were gracious.
He also revolutionized not just the palate of the kosher restaurant consumer, as far as food, he also revolutionized the taste in wine. In fact, before you, a kosher restaurant having dry wine, come now, it's obvious that the Jews of New York will never stand for it. Nobody will ever order it.
Not only in
and
New
yet,
York, in the world.
You guys had the guts to do it, and you succeeded, and you revolutionized the whole industry.
Now, talk about having the guts. I remember some people just thinking we were the devil. They were just like, not her again, not her brother-in-law again, not her husband again. Because things were, you know, we rocked the boat. We rocked the boat. We obliged the mashgichim, the supervisor, the kosher supervisor, to look into everything. Everything that was not shrimp and pork, just look into it. If we can have it, we want it. That was the thing. And it was, like, so outrageous. It was, like, not very... It was not very, what's the word, theistic. You know what I mean? It was not modest. From an Orthodox person to say, if we can have it, we want to have it. I used to pester Menachem Lubinsky or the Kafke or the OK or the Star K, Rabbi Heinemann. Can we have it? Do your research. If we can have it, let us have it. And it's because of people that were huge pains in the neck like me. Now they're very grateful. Now they love me. Made the kosher world, the kosher food world so much more interesting. And I'll tell you something. Forget about New York. And I'll say, the world. We arrived in a wine scene of Shapiro and Manischewitz. The wine you
That's
could
right.
touch with a knife. There was nothing. Then we looked into it and we say, hey, it's about mevushal. Mevushal, you cook it to a certain temperature. Now we made so much progress that there are actually some varieties of wine that gain by being mevushal. In other words, by being cooked to a certain temperature, not above, mm-hmm. not below. Now it enhances and so much so that some kosher wines, many kosher wines, are winning
International awards, absolutely.
Yes.
Not only that, but even some wineries which have no interest in kosher wines are starting to cook their wines because...
Yes, Chaim, you want to hear something? Yeah, it's true. It's absolutely true. You know that, what is that restaurant called in L.A.? Oxnard?
No, Tierra Sur in Oxnard.
Tierra Sur, Oxnard, yeah. I took my little nephew, my sister, and my nephew's wife. We were in L.A. I was in L.A. on a book tour, and I said, okay, let's go there, Tierra Sur. Let's just go see what it's all about. And sure enough, while we were being seated, I see two decidedly non-Jewish-looking couples. And I was very intrigued. I said, why would they come here? They could cross the street and go anywhere. They could stay in L.A. and order anything they want. And I said, you know, forgive me. I am curious. Why would you, you know, come to here, to Oxnard? They said, we drove 30 miles. We love it. We love the wines. We love the food. If that is not the greatest proof of many, many non-kosher people coming just because it's good. They don't have to. They want to. Then I don't know what is. They made my day. There was a deal in this Tierra Sur lunch deal of some assorted hors d'oeuvres with some assorted wines. And these two couples say that they regularly drive like once a week to have that selection each time changing and the wines changing to accommodate the selection. I said, we have moved up in the world. I remember the time where we would run for the hills when we saw kosher food. Now, they run for the hills to find kosher food, and that is a
Listen,
triumph.
There was a time when the joke went that if you want kosher wine, all you have to do is buy any bottle of wine, throw out half of it, fill it up with sugar, mix it well, now you have kosher wine.
Fantastic. And some cough syrup.
No joke. Yes.
Yeah. It's true.
In fact, when I was growing up in Uruguay, my father, Alava Shalom, used to make his own wine. And
exactly. My father also made his own.
Yeah. 3 weeks before Pesach, he would bottle 450 bottles, which made enough bottles for one bottle every day for us. The rest would go to the local Rabbonim and some close friends and family.
Exactly, my own
now,
grandfather.
My father's wine was extra sweet, 21% alcohol. If I were to drink that today, I would kill over.
Yes.
When I first came to this country, I didn't know any better. I thought that was wine.
My parents, I remember my grandparents making a fabulous, you know, now that you introduced me to that guy who makes Mahia.
Yes.
The Eau de Vie. So we had grandparents who did that. We had, and it was fantastic, that fig brandy with anise and everything. That's not sweet. It's rather robust. In other words, we, in our Mediterranean countries, we were a little more well-rounded. We didn't have the wines. We didn't have any of that, but we had all those foods. We had, just because of what I told you in the beginning, because we didn't approach it from an angle of we are restricted, it was exactly the opposite. By the way, this applies to a time that we think about restriction big time, like Passover. What are we going to eat? What are we going to eat? You know, I don't know if you were there. I think I remember you being there at a meeting for Manischewitz where one of the executives said something that I found incredibly inappropriate. He said that until they came along and brought their, I don't know, 900 products.
Yeah, there was nothing to eat. Right.
There was nothing except matzah and hard-boiled eggs. Excuse me, we ate like kings on Passover. First of all, we had all the meat, all the fish, all the fruit, all the veggies. Absolutely. What is it that we didn't have? Bread, rice?
Yeah, that was
that is called starving.
Ashkenazim. We had all types of hang-ups in Europe. There was all types of things we
for
never
no reason.
Ate, for example.
For no reason. Because
exactly.
of the mindset.
Exactly.
Even
as
in America
Mark,
now, even with all the variety, they go and buy, I don't know, 15 dozens of eggs because, God forbid, what are we going to eat?
Right,
It's silly. It's really, really silly.
One of the problems that we Ashkenazim had is, as Gil Marx said on the radio, when Ashkenazic Jews came into Eastern Europe, some of the Rabbanim wrote responsa saying that we are not allowed to eat any vegetables because since they did not exist in the Middle East, obviously HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not make it for us to be kosher, whereas the Sephardim never had a problem. In fact, he says that when it came to tomatoes, Ashkenazim used to refer to tomatoes as treifene epo. Treifapos.
Too bad. That's really too
in
bad.
In 1840, all of a sudden...
They didn't know what they were missing.
Right. In 1840, all of a sudden, when there was this horrible famine all over Europe, when cattle was dying all over Europe and we couldn't have meat, all of a sudden we discovered potatoes and everything else that we had never eaten before. So I guess the famine, in a way, was a blessing in disguise, I guess.
Exactly, exactly. It made you more resourceful.
Right. And we're just about out of time. Thank you very, very much. As always, you're a wonderful guest.
It was so much fun. Thank you so much for having me.
And good night, ladies and gentlemen. The pleasure is mine, as always.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very
good
much,
night.
Ladies and gentlemen. We will be back again next week. Good night, one and all.